Welcome to Cold Email with Basha and Olive. Episode 11, The Case for Doing Dumb Stuff.
Hey.
Hey. We're talking about dumb stuff this week.
Oh, sorry, I was drinking water. Yeah, we are talking about dumb stuff this week.
Yay, dumb stuff.
Today, we're gonna make the case for doing dumb stuff. Before we even get into what dumb stuff is, I just want to say happy Ball of Day to you, Olive.
Happy Ball of Day to you, Basha. For those who don't know, do you want to give a brief history?
I was going to actually say disclaimer, it's not Ball of Day. It's fine. By the time you're listening to this, it probably won't be Ball of Day.
It will have passed. It will be like 2 weeks
Or it will
past.
Be upcoming. Because maybe you listen to this.
Oh yeah,
12
maybe you
months,
listen to this.
11 months from now.
In August of 2022 or
possible.
So on and so forth.
Anyways, Ball of Day is August 25th.
It's a very special day. It is the day that we met in our freshman year latent color theory class. How much do you want me to go into depth of this?
I was just gonna say it's our friendship anniversary, and it's
yeah.
just funny that we can go back to a certain date because it was the second day of college, but Olive hadn't had classes, but I
so
did.
So it was my first day, technically. Yeah.
And I had a really rough 6-hour drawing class the day before. I came in late because I was at the counseling office trying to move things around because no one would answer my email and I had an AP credit. Yeah. And then everyone looked at me weird when I came in 30 minutes late. And then also walking in with me was someone who said that they just threw up outside and it wasn't even the right class. And I felt really bad, but it was kind of like, oh, we're a team. So I'm like on a team with the person who threw up, which is fine. It happens to everyone, but it was a little rough. So
it's the first day. It's
yeah,
sucks for that person.
Second
too.
Day was rough too.
Yeah,
I gotta
second
say,
second day was that was really hard.
I think we were sitting near each other just by chance, but we ran into each other at Blick because we had to go to get supplies during the lunch break.
Yeah, I think we went with each other. We were like, you want to go
oh,
to Blick?
Oh, I misremembering. I actually thought Olive had a really... The first thing I thought of Olive was this person. Olive is, like, scowling and, like, looks super emo. Like, dyed hair,
I was wearing,
all black.
Like, all black. Like, the
yeah.
first day of school. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why I decided to wear jeans. It was, like, 100 degrees that day. I changed during the lunch break because I was like, I'm an idiot. I feel so dumb.
You're smart.
You're
not
like,
dumb.
I am sweating so much.
Who knew? Who knew those classrooms were from 1800? But anyways, my first thought about Olive, who's wearing all black and super like cool dyed hair and just scowling, I literally thought to myself, and I remember it, this person has a bad attitude and doesn't want to be here. And honestly, both were true. You hated. I mean, that class was.
I hated
that color theory class was rough.
Oh, it was. It was rough.
But, you know, we made it. Here we are 7 years later.
Oh my
Is
God.
Is it seven? Okay, six. 6 or 7 years.
Yeah, it's like six. This August.
We're,
wow.
Yeah, okay. Crazy.
Wow.
All right, so happy Ball of Day. I think
happy
we got a little sidetracked.
Yeah.
It's a big day, though. And if you're here, you might care about it.
Yeah. It's our podcast. So what are we talking about this week?
I feel like this is perfect. We're talking about doing dumb stuff. We're making the case for doing dumb stuff.
Yes.
We love doing dumb stuff.
We do.
Can you explain what dumb stuff is, Olive?
So, dumb stuff is, like, doing things that, like, nobody, like, tells you to do and, like, not what they, like, encourage you to do. It's, like, the opposite of, like, hustle culture. But doing dumb stuff is kind of just, like, doing what you want. It's, like, personal things that, like, nobody cares about except you. But maybe other people will care about it. You never know until you try it out. But,
Yeah.
And from the get-go, you're like, you know what? Above all, I'm doing this because it makes me happy.
Yeah, I think...
And it's fun, even if people think it's stupid.
I think a lot of it is, in a big way, dumb stuff is... means putting your values above what society tells you are, like, the right values. And a lot of times that means it's in conflict with capitalism. For,
yes.
I think, me at least, and you, probably. Yeah, I would say dumb stuff... are things that people discourage you from doing sometimes, or at least it's the opposite of what they encourage. Yeah, I feel like in a lot of ways, dumb stuff kind of is anti, like, social norms rooted in kind of the evils of society. I know that's a lot, but it's like, you know, it's anti-capitalist, it's anti, like, racist. Well, I guess for us it is. Maybe for other people it isn't, but
it's anti-establishment.
Yeah, anti-establishment. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because you want to. And it brings value to you and to your heart and mind and soul.
Yeah. I feel like a good, like, concrete example of doing dumb stuff is when you post, like, a project you're super stoked on, like a personal project, for example, and you get 4 likes because it doesn't fit the Instagram algorithm's, like, yes, definition of whatever content that it should be showing. And it doesn't mean that your whatever you made is bad, like your work. It's just the values of Instagram and you are different.
Yeah.
But honestly, that stuff always makes everyone feel bad, I think, not getting a lot of likes. The whole numbers thing, it's not the good dumb stuff, it's, like, stupid stuff. Yeah, maybe, like there's dumb, like, stuff,
yeah,
which is good, and, like, what you feel is good and true in the world that maybe sometimes is in conflict with, like, capitalist ideologies, and then there's stupid stuff, which is... pro-capitalist ideology.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, I think we just wrote a book, and I think it's called The Communist Manifesto. Just kidding. But we've both read a lot of it. Yes. I'm gonna cut that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... Oh, wait. You know, I came up with that on my the whole stupid stuff versus dumb stuff.
Yeah.
But we literally wrote that. That's so silly. That's dumb stuff. Anyways, yeah, stupid stuff is often capitalist-driven. Dumb stuff is personal, anti-capitalist, whatever. As Olive mentioned, dumb stuff is kind of the opposite of hustle culture, which is kind of just, like, doing things to make money. Stupid stuff, I don't know, maybe it's, like, akin to slow fashion. Like, that's maybe a concrete example, even though I think that is a fraught thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of things that go into, so to sum it up, doing dumb stuff is, like, just doing what you want, and, like, things like work out, or it's, like, just by coincidence also. Those algorithms, sometimes there's a fluke in it.
Yeah, I think also important to notice that, like, you're not maybe doing dumb stuff always with, like, a big goal in mind.
Yeah.
Like, you do it because you feel like it's the right thing to do or what you should do right now. Like, maybe for me, doing dumb stuff was buying a chain stitch machine. And I like, did a lot of planning for it, I must say. I did so much planning. I was freaking out. I wrote stuff down. I crunched numbers. But I also, like, you know, I didn't buy it for a specific project. I kind of... It was like a leap of faith. A leap of faith within myself. No, a leap of faith in believing in myself. Yeah. And not, like, knowing where it's going to end up is maybe also dumb stuff.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, I think that's a key part of it, too, is, like, just doing it and not knowing where it'll go and trusting the direction it'll take you. It's like, I don't know where this is going to go. Maybe it'll go somewhere, maybe it'll lead me somewhere else, or maybe it won't lead me anywhere at all, but at least I tried it, you know, and had a good time doing it.
Yeah, and being okay with the outcome.
Yeah, yeah. Being okay with the outcome no matter what it is.
Yeah. Because you did what you wanted to do, and you what you felt was right.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about maybe the dumbest professional things we've both ever done.
Well, I have like an immediate one that I just did this weekend. I covered my entire lamp in my office in felt and made it look like a giant flower because I wanted to. And then I went in the living room and I took that lamp and I wrapped it all in felt and I'm turning it into a little carousel lamp and I'm gonna make tiny horses that go on it. So that was my, like, dumb stuff of the weekend. I don't know where that's gonna go, but it was fun. I'm like, okay, this is cool. I like wrapping cheap lamps in fabric and making them into something akin to Webkinz furniture.
Oh my god. That's cool.
I'll have to send you a picture of
please.
It.
Please. I'm of really the happy secondary with it. Lamp. Yeah, I would love to see that. I think that's peak dumb stuff also, because it's not like you're like setting out with the intention of prototyping a line of lamps, but it could be that.
Yeah, I'm like, this is my lamp in my house. I'm like, I don't know what people would want with this, but I like it and it's for my house.
And I think the thing also is that it could lead to like, what if your whole job in 2 years is designing these felt-wrapped lamps or whatever, and you make $1 million from it?
Yeah, like, what if I make, like, a kit, and it could be, like, for your lamp type, and I just send you fabric, and you just, with, like, the patterns, and people just put it together, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's, like, a million things you could do. Also, if you're listening, do not steal that idea.
Yeah, don't steal my lamps idea.
We're trusting.
I haven't posted that on Instagram yet.
Okay, here's my dumb professional story. My dumb stuff professional story. Which you might recognize. I might have told it once on here, but I think it bears repeating in this context. The Mets have a channel. And when the Mets aren't playing a game that's aired on that channel, SNY, they have to fill time. Usually that's white guys talking about baseball for like 2 hour specials about how hot David Wright is or how good David Wright is, whatever. I was kind of bummed out one day and I was at home and my dad was like, let's put on the game. And I was like, no, it's rained out. Like, I'm sad. I'm sad because it's rained out. And he's like, let's just, like, he just had put it on. And I saw, like, some weird emojis pop up on screen. And it's like, this is a date. And I was like, what? Like, what is this? And so it was a 2017 TV show called Prospects about dating and matchmaking and kind of a game show all happening at Citi Field during a Mets game. It's a really funny and crazy show, really niche.
Extremely. That's like so niche. I love how niche it is though.
Me too. Basically, Prospects TV show, matchmaking, weird. It's really hard to find. Like it's like the weirdest nichest thing, as Olive mentioned. And so I tried to look up some more episodes online once I figured out what the show I was watching was called. And since it's like so, it was pretty unpopular too. So there's like not a lot online about it. So the person who made its website came up pretty quickly. And I was like, oh, like that would be so funny if I emailed this person. Like, I love Prospects. Like, if Prospects ever exist again, like, I would love to like work on Prospects. And then 2 weeks later, I was bored and I was like, okay, I'm just like, this feels like the right thing. Like, I'm just gonna do it. Like, this is super dumb stuff. And I sent a crazy email, but then I got a crazy email back pretty quickly. And by crazy, I mean thoughtful and nice.
Yes.
Both of us.
Yes, it both just, of you were so nice.
Yeah, it was just like dumb stuff because it's like in school, they're not gonna tell you to get a job by emailing the creator of SNY's 2017 matchmaking show Prospects.
Yeah, no.
Just that you like this show. But it did end up with the creator of Prospects hitting me up for an art direction job.
I think that also brings in, like, being a fan of things. It's like, wow, you could just, like, send fan mail, you know?
Yeah.
Even not, like, yeah, you know, we talk about this a lot, but, like, yeah, you can just be, like, a person and be like, hey, I like your stuff. That's, like, a dumb thing that they don't tell you to, like, do is, like, message other, like, creators and be like, hey, your stuff is cool.
I mean, that's how Julian Glander got on this podcast.
Yeah.
He DM'd us. And I was like, yeah, wait, yeah, come through.
Yeah, and it's like a thing you forget that you can do. It's like you can just reach out to people and just, like, talk to them about stuff. And it feels dumb, like, you know, because you don't know if you're going to get anything out of it. But it doesn't matter if you do. You never know where it'll lead. And that led to a cool job for you and a cool connection, yeah.
And Julian Glander's led to a cool episode.
Yeah.
And a couple more Instagram followers, shout out for the shout out. You know how it is. What was I gonna... Oh, I think dumb stuff is also, like, about being joyful.
Yeah. Having fun.
Yeah. Yeah. The general idea of work in American society is that it kind of sucks. It's not fun. Like, it's doing a job. Because it is, like, you know, sure, it is. There's a reason why they call it work. But also... I don't know, maybe in the creative field there's more opportunity to have fun with it because it's something we all enjoy and love at the heart of the business. Yeah, so I think being joyful is part of it and appreciating things. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, being joyful, enjoying it, yeah, and being appreciative of it.
Enjoying the ride.
Yeah, life is a highway.
Oh, and I feel like dumb stuff is just being nice and thoughtful, because everyone wants you to be, like, a weird, freak, heartless robot. I mean,
and,
if,
like,
you've ever been
super,
on a Tinder...
Super, like, you know, tight professional, too. It's like, it's okay to have fun and send emails all in lowercase. Because you're cool and casual and you like to have a good time.
I'm just like, look at me, I like to have a good time. You can write in lowercase too, free yourself.
Oh yeah, I got an email for a video project yesterday. Yes, I'm like, well, not like lowercase, but like this person is using like emojis in it, and I feel free to use lowercase emailing them.
Okay, I love an email emoji.
And this person was just, like, so nice and casual from the get-go. And it's like, wow, they didn't have to do that. But they did. And it just made it so much better, so much easier to talk to them. And, yeah. Being nice.
Doing dumb stuff is being nice and also doing the right thing. Just to recap, to be totally clear, to be so blunt it hurts. Doing dumb stuff is never... dumb.
No.
It's what other people think is dumb, but it's actually, like, the right thing to do or things you want to do that just feel right and are good for you or you just love.
Yeah, it's stuff that feels right and good for you. Yeah, like, yeah. Things that you do that feel right and good for you regardless of what, like, others may see it as being for you.
Oh my god.
Does that sum it up?
Yes, but I just realized I ate a rice cake and a mini arepa today, and it's 4 o'clock.
Oh my god.
I'm sorry.
Have a snack. Do you need to go get a snack?
Well, we can finish this. We're almost done. Anyways, like, celebrating Ball of Day, like, that shit rules. I love that. That's totally dumb stuff, because no one else who... whatever. The CEO of Goldman Sachs would say, don't celebrate Ball of Day, that's dumb.
Yeah, like, why? Like, what's the point of it?
Because
it's fun. It rules.
Happy Ball of Day.
Happy Ball of Day to you, too.
To you and to Hiller Goodspeed, who we're about to talk to.
Yes.
But for sponsorships.
But first,
ads.
Our sponsor of the week is actually Hiller Goodspeed for his book, Pond Life. All right, I'm recording now. I'm gonna read Hiller Goodspeed's thing. You can check out Hiller's work at hillergoodspeed.ca and at Hiller Goodspeed on Instagram. Check out his new book, Pond Life, published by Perfectly Acceptable Press. It's only $30. Let's see. Pond Life collects 146 drawings by Hiller Goodspeed addressing today's most pressing issues: cardboard boxes, art, understanding, haircuts, time, space, Florida, and many others, including an appendix with book club discussion questions, alternative titles, and more. Pond Life was published in May of 2021 by Perfectly Acceptable Press. It's $30, 6x7 inches, case-bound hardcover, spot color offset, edition of 2500. Oh, that's cool. You want me to read the ISBN? The ISBN is 978-1-7343247-2-3. What a steal. I, Olive, personally recommend this book. I don't have it, but I recommend it. It looks so cool, and I want it. Sweet.
That was the ads. Thank you, Olive. You're good at reading the ads.
Of course.
Totally. That was worth the $5.
Part 2. The interview with Hiller Goodspeed.
Oh, how was the thing?
Oh my god.
How did the thing go?
Should we read Hiller's bio and then I'll tell you?
Yeah.
Okay. So here is the interview with Hiller Goodspeed. So Hiller has no bio on his website, which is huge dumb stuff energy. So we wrote a good and dumb one for Hiller. Here we go. Hiller Goodspeed draws a lot of things, often with colored pencils and also with regular pencils. Sometimes he makes art objects. His work is usually irreverent, but I'm not mad if and when it's not. Hiller and I follow each other on Twitter. Olive's Instagram icon is similar to his. He seems like he likes to have a good time. We hope he will have a good time on this very podcast.
That was perfect.
Thank you. Okay. Hello, Hiller.
Hello.
Welcome, Hiller. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Oh, I realized we didn't introduce ourselves because you came. Yeah. Just came in. I was like, oh no. I'm Basha.
I'm Olive.
Nice to meet you both. I'm Hiller Goodspeed.
Nice to meet you as well. Okay, so on this episode, we're talking about dumb stuff, as I mentioned in that email to you.
Yeah, so we define dumb stuff as, like, doing things and existing how you want to, often in spite of, like, what people tell you to do, as, like, an inherently, like, anti-capitalist, like, anti-hustle culture, like, way of making work, and, like, the idea is that, like, success... like, if success comes from, like, doing any, like, dumb stuff is incidental, and it's, like, acting in a way and, like, drawing things, making things that align with, like, your own values, and it's usually, like, in opposition of, like, the more widely held, like, societal ideals.
Yeah, so... Oh, thank you.
I'm not sure what that one.
I know. Reading it. It's like, I don't want to be like, oh, that was me.
Yeah, that was.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm going to ask you the first question, and then we kind of have three sections here, which is questions about dumb stuff, a couple about your practice, which they'll bleed over, and one just titled fun. That's like a little fun section. Okay, so question one. Do you love dumb stuff?
I love dumb stuff. I would say that I started sharing stuff on the internet like pretty early on, like in, I would say 2010, 2009. And it was always kind of dumb stuff. And I shared so much of it and I just continued to create and share things. And I kind of slowly became more popular over the years just because of this stuff that, like, I wasn't really drawing for any reason other than to just share my work with people online, like on Tumblr mostly for quite a large chunk of that time. And it kind of became more popular because of the dumb stuff that I had done. And because of that, like, it kind of resulted in all kinds of things. Like, I was never trying to be a freelance, like, illustrator, and I wasn't really trying to create, like, a career or any kind of path for myself. But sharing that dumb stuff has resulted in, you know, opportunities and all kinds of fun stuff. But it is kind of inherent, like, in my practice, and I still am a large proponent of just dumb things in general. And so I think, you know, I try to, like, when I share stuff online now, it's more complicated, and there's, you know, there's, like, promotion and all kinds of things, like, mixed in there, but I still try to share a percentage of stuff that's just kind of stupid, and, you know, and maybe not stupid, but it doesn't really have any purpose other than being a weird, funny thing that people can look at and enjoy for a moment or two.
That's really nice. What is your favorite dumb thing / what is your favorite dumb thing you've made? So I guess if you feel that's like any, a lot of projects you've made. And again, just we mean dumb and in a very nice, and we don't mean bad at all. We feel like we make dumb stuff too.
Yeah, I mean, before we recorded, I was going to make a whole list. I had like a sheet of paper that I was going to fill out with all this information, but I have tried that before, and it just like, it's a train wreck, and that I'm trying to like read this list, and it doesn't, it's like not a natural like conversation. And so I don't have anything prepared, but I have done so much dumb stuff. And just recently, probably the biggest dumb thing I've done recently is, so I had a book called Pawn Life come out, and VanCalf asked me to do something for the festival this year to promote the book. And so I had this random idea that I could just make a video in which I walk around, I go to Vancouver ponds and just kind of talk about the ponds, and not in like a educational, like helpful way, but just kind of I don't know anything about ponds, but I'm just going to make general observations. And so my partner and I, we spent a couple days just going to ponds, and she would record me standing in front of a body of water talking about like the wildlife and the sunshine and the plants. And I came home and edited it all and put it up online. And it was just kind of a fun exercise. And I was really happy to get to do it, because I often sink time into projects and all kinds of things that are just kind of like for my own weird like satisfaction that don't really have any purpose. And so being asked to do something, and VanCalf was really great. And, you know, I suggested my weird idea and they were like 100% for it. So, and it's still up on YouTube, but, yeah, that was really fun to make. And it was, it resulted in kind of a fun, like 10-minute video that, I don't know. It's, I've watched it like a handful of times, but it was really fun to do that and just kind of like improvise and, you know, make jokes. Maybe, I don't know if you can call them jokes always, but, trying to be like, you know, a funnier version of myself, just talking about nature.
That's so fun. Oh my God. Let's see. Do you have a story of doing or making a quote dumb thing that resulted in like a job, like something like, you know, professional, like a book, like a professional relationship, et cetera, et cetera?
Let's see. I mean, I've done so much dumb stuff over the years, and I get emails, like people often contact me. I have my email on my website, and I don't always ask them like where they saw me. Like sometimes it's just they just generally know about something I've done. But sometimes they do cite, you know, like, oh, you did this one thing and I saw your name attached to it, and I might get a freelance job, you know, because of that. But I don't know. I think that there is so much kind of dumb stuff in the mix that it's very possible that they saw, you know, something I did, but also saw that, you know, mixed up with, you know, making wood butter or like I have, like, I made all that, I don't know if you all saw it, I made like 100 sticks of like wooden butter. I'm not a woodworker.
Love that.
That was another, I still have all of them like here. But it was just kind of a way to like spend time like working on wood stuff. But I don't know if anyone's ever cited a dumb thing that I've done and like has, you know, told me that's why they're hiring me to work on their like magazine illustrations. But I would have to think that it's definitely possible that, you know, those dumb things have resulted in, you know, freelance work.
Yeah, I would even wager that like maybe people don't feel comfortable citing dumb stuff because they feel stupid. Oh, also we've like made a distinction between like dumb stuff and stupid stuff, and we have like a whole little system for this. Stupid stuff is like the like unfun mundane, maybe like the pro-capitalist things, and dumb stuff's like the good the good stuff that they say is dumb. So I think maybe like people feel more comfortable citing stupid stuff than dumb stuff.
Yeah, I feel like when people, you know, send you an email, they don't want to say, hey, I saw that you like painted on a rock and like left it in the woods, like, you know, that's not why we're giving you this opportunity. So they might say like, oh, I saw your name attached to a prestigious illustration in this publication, and that's why we're contacting you. But more often than not, they just kind of say, hey, we're fans of your work, and they don't necessarily, you know, tell me why they're getting in touch.
Yeah, that I think that's always a fun mystery. Can you tell us about a time you made a mistake and how it ended up working out? And this is kind of, I think, in the same vein, because mistakes are like not upholding, you know, like capitalist ideals of like hyper productivity. So I think mistakes fall under dumb stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I started posting stuff, like you can actually, if you go to my Tumblr, and you go back to 2010, you can see like my progression and just like my general style and how that developed. So in a lot of ways, like all of my like learning and mistakes are kind of still up there, and there's a progression. I've gone through a few times and kind of have, you know, you tend to kind of shy away from your earlier stuff because, you know, you've grown and you've matured and you think you're better than that now. But like going through, and that's part of the charm, I think, of, you know, having a whole archive of stuff online, is that you can kind of look through and you can see things. And even like going back, like some of that stuff is just like, you posted it and like no one cared like at all. And like, you just kind of left it up because like, why would you, you know, delete things? But like you go back and you're like, oh wow, that was like really strange. Like, you know, you're drawing like Bobby Hill and like Dale Earnhardt. And like, I didn't always have this like cute way of drawing. And so there were times where I was just like doing random stuff and like maybe not mistakes per se, but kind of experimenting with like things that were fun to draw. And so I think that, you know, over the years, all of that stuff kind of, you know, it got better, it got stronger. There was more purpose. Like I started being asked to do stuff and I was like, okay, I have to learn how to write emails. And like, you get better at like all the aspects of freelance work. And I don't know, it's all still out there. So you can all, you know, track it down and you know, go back to my early years and see like that. I mean, I know that the face I draw is kind of like a thing, like the way I draw faces, and you can kind of see how that came out of something that wasn't quite, you know, what it is now.
I know there are a lot of people that love to like wipe their online existence clean, like at kind of regular intervals, and just like start over and kind of burn it all to the ground. Do you feel that you're more of like an archivist?
Yeah, so I do work in a library and archive. And so I have a respect for the history of things. And sometimes I do, you know, go back and like delete things like that I just, for whatever reason, don't really like and don't really want people to comment on or look at anymore. But there are often times where I like go to somebody's page and I'm like, oh, I want to see what this person has done and like what kind of cool work they've been doing. And they have like 13 posts. And it's like, I know you've been like sharing stuff for like ages. And it's kind of like, I guess they just really want to like control what people are saying, which is fair. But I kind of just like have left it all out, and I always have. And like, I have thought about like going through and just mass deleting stuff. But like, once it's kind of gone, like that record of, you know, what you've made, but also how people have interacted with it. And like, you know, like things on Tumblr, it's like, there's like a history there that, you know, sometimes you want to go back and revisit for whatever reason. Like you want to go back and see what people thought of that drawing in 2012 that you did that like was in your notebook for like, you know, months, and you didn't really think anything of it. And then you shared it and it, you know, got popular. Because yeah, sometimes it's fun to go through the archive and look at stuff. But yeah, I mean, archives are, it's kind of like my secondary job. So I do think a lot about like my presence and how it's kind of weird to have everything existing online. Like, I know that like one day Tumblr will, you know, shut down and you can download your files and then it'll be erased, which is kind of like a scary thought. But yeah, I'm gonna leave it up for the most part. You know, there might be one post that I think is just should be taken down for whatever reason, but I'm pretty happy with everything, you know, staying up there for people to look and see.
Yeah, I also was gonna speak to like Tumblr as like the kind of like infinite scroll that Tumblr has really lends itself to that like archiving quality, and like the fact that people will go back to posts from like 5 or 10 years ago and they'll like recirculate like and like, you know, pops back up on your feed. It's like, oh wow, that was popular so long ago. And it's like interesting how like it kind of foregoes that like Instagram algorithm like that, and it will just throw you back stuff from like 5 or 10 years ago. It's super interesting. And on to the next question. Do you want to speak to like the importance of like making dumb stuff as like a fun and like joyful experience, as like a way to like, you know, making art as like a fun thing?
Yeah, I mean, I've always kind of made art for fun. Like there's always been a fun to it. And that's kind of why I started making things and sharing things. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, I used to draw all the time. So I've always kind of created stuff, like just for the sheer joy of creation. And I was thinking about it this morning. I like go on a morning walk every day and I'm like, why am I making all of this like, you know, dumb stuff and like all these things that I share? And you know, it is, I would say it's in reaction to a lot of feelings I get from like Instagram. Like, especially, it's such a like twisted place in that you go there and like there's so many things for sale. And it's like, I respect that. And like, I sell things too. And I know it's like a complicated issue. But at the end of the day, I kind of just want to like make stuff. And so, I mean, making stuff and sharing stuff that has no purpose other than for people to enjoy it is kind of, it's important. And I think that, you know, I could sell more prints and I could sell more stuff. But I think there's just so much of that and it burns me out. Like I get so, like there are just times where I just like want to like, you know, separate myself from social media completely because there's so much like buying and selling. But I mean, that's not why, you know, I create things. And, you know, the funness of it is really why, you know, I do it. And so there are times, you know, where I'll make a print of something, or I'll just, you know, I'll table at a comic fair and like I'll, you know, sell stuff. But even then, it's usually in small like batches. Like I like creating things in like limited numbers. Like I like hand stapling zines or hand like sewing the binding, and I like making things like that, but not that aren't available like infinitely. Like if I make like a product, like I'm probably not going to be making like 10,000 of them, because I feel like in a certain respect, like these things don't always scale to that size. Like you don't always like I don't know, like sometimes things are better when they're smaller, and like the fun aspect is definitely like a involved in that. And that, like, sometimes the bigger it gets, the more complicated it gets in like every respect, and it kind of like removes that fun element and like turns it into like this like business venture that is cool, and like some people do it really well, but I'm not really like that kind of I don't have that mind, and so I can't manage that, but I also don't I don't know, it's just a lot to think about. So I, you know, keeping things smaller, you know, when I do make like print runs, I often do like screen prints or like riso prints. And it's just kind of, you know, trying to keep everything within like this sphere of like what I think is fun and what is, you know, fair for people to, you know, have access to my work, but also isn't like overextending myself in that, you know, I'm talking to producers and, you know, crunching numbers and trying to figure out taxes and like import fees. And like, that's a whole side of like illustration and freelance in general that, I don't know, I haven't really gotten very good at, just because it's not fun. Like at the end of the day, it's not like, I just don't really want to do it. So I try to keep things manageable from my end.
Yeah, I think it's so hard to remember to be joyful sometimes. I think that's something it seems like you've really greatly figured out, like avoiding the stuff you don't want to do. Probably helps a lot. I mean, it's hard to remember sometimes. I think once to all of I said, like, it's like so cool to live the dream, but when something goes wrong, like, you're living the nightmare. Like, it, when it's just a dream, it can't really hurt you. And when you're living the dream, a lot can. So I think a lot of times, at least for me, I find myself looking for the joy that I had when I first started. And I think I'm getting better at like figuring it out and like maintaining it. But yeah, it's I think a really interesting balance. I think that's also a good transition into like a little more of questions about like the businessy like practice stuff.
Yeah, sure. Let's go into it.
Okay, cool. Is it cool to draw what you want in the way you want to, and people, including giant companies like Google, are just cool with it, and they're like, okay, like, do it?
Yeah, like I mean, like I said, my whole like freelance career kind of resulted in just like people contacting me and being like, hey, do you want to do this? Like, hey, do you want to jump on a call and like, you know, we can talk about, you know, this project. And those emails started coming, and they just kind of, you know, I get them on a regular basis, and it is fun. And because I work in a library as well, I kind of get to choose what I want to do. So there have been, I've had times where I've had emails from clients and I'm like, I just don't want to do this. Like I'm not that like straightforward, but I do get to kind of choose, you know, what I work on. And so, yeah, it's and like, yeah, the Google thing was like probably the biggest project I've ever done. And it's really neat when you get contacted by, you know, a company like that, and they're kind of like, they want you to do what you do, and they're not like, they might have feedback and they might have suggestions, and there might be like, you know, other information that you're using when you're, you know, illustrating, but they kind of trust like your style and like your choices. So they might say like, oh, like, you know, illustrate someone doing something frustrating and they're just like angry, and then they, you know, and you get to interpret, you know, that information, and you get to draw something like kind of fun and like maybe make it a little weird, but like, you know, cool enough for Google to like approve. Yeah, it's been really fascinating. I think that's one of the best parts about like my freelance work that I do, is that oftentimes people will contact me and they are asking me to do something like that I, in my style that I want to do. And I'm generally comfortable in doing it because I, you know, it's not, there's not 100% like direction. Like it is kind of like, there is some leeway there in like how I interpret it. And so that's been really cool. And that's one of the reasons why I enjoy doing freelance work and do it, because, you know, there have been times where it's not fun. It's like someone wants something very specific, and it's like, it just strips away all of the enjoyment from like even creating things. It's like, you know, it becomes more of like this like painstaking process. And it's like, sometimes when you're getting paid to do stuff, it makes it like really hard to do. And like, it's nice when it's an enjoyable process and they, you know, they trust you enough to interpret what they, you know, what they want with, you know, your style and what you can do.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I agree. But like, sometimes when you're getting paid for something, it's just like, it becomes like a bit of a drag, and, you know, they have like all these edits and they want it their way. And it's like, okay, I just want to go back to making little drawings for myself.
Yeah. I mean, there have been times where I've got emails from like high schoolers and they're like, hey, it's my friend Stephanie's birthday, like in August. Like, can you like, and I like, I will spend like an hour, I spend a lot of time sometimes on things that are just for fun. And it's just like, you know, I mail stuff all the time. And like, you know, it's not often that I like do that kind of stuff. But when I decide, you know, and someone contacts me and they have like a sweet idea, I'm like, this is like really cool. And like, I'll spend all kinds of time working on stuff that, you know, is not paid like at all. And I don't know, I kind of pick and choose what I want to do. And it doesn't always make sense. And there's not like a logic to it always. Like, sometimes my partner Erin will like ask me why I'm like spending so much time doing something that, you know, is for some stranger. But I do, you know, enjoy that kind of work too.
Yeah, that's great. It's like, art is like all about like connection. And like you said earlier, it's like making something that brings somebody joy, and like, you know, getting paid for it is like, you know, for all of us career creatives, it's not like secondary because we all need to eat and live, but you know, the thing at the base of it is like, you want to like make people happy. And that's like such an incredible, like unique thing to like art making, to like be able to do that for people. We touched on Tumblr a little bit, but do you want to talk about like the impact it had on like your early practice, and like maybe talking about like that like community aspect and like, you know, making things for other people? Like, did it have any like impact on that?
Yeah, it was a good litmus test in that I could post things, and like sometimes I would get 5 likes or 3 likes, or I would draw something and I would get 26 likes, and I'm like, oh, that's like, you know, maybe people are liking that more. And so I did kind of use those, like, you know, numbers and statistics to kind of maybe guide my way into something that was, you know, more accessible. Like, people weren't so into like the Bobby Hill drawings and like, you know, strange stuff like that. But I mean, I love Bobby Hill. But yeah, I kind of used that information to kind of, you know, draw what I drew, but also at the same time was weary of doing too much in the way of like what other people like wanted. And I don't know, it was really fun to just, you know, post stuff and get feedback and comments and reblogs and kind of like hear what like real time, you know, feedback from strangers on the internet. And that did inform, you know, a lot of what I did. But oh, we have a timer here. Yeah, does that answer the question?
Yeah.
However much you want to give.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that sometimes you know what people like, and sometimes that's a good thing, but sometimes producing work for people to share and reblog is like just as like, it's terrible. Like, it's, I could probably draw things that I know people would really enjoy and would share and it would be popular. But I kind of, and that's kind of where dumb stuff comes in as well, where I do things that are like anti, like, you know, what people would expect. Like, they might see a drawing that I do and go, oh, I'm gonna follow this guy. He's, you know, drawing really cute stuff about like, you know, loving yourself and being nice to plants and, you know, all this stuff. And sometimes I do things that are like maybe not anti, but they're, it's like pushing back against what people might be expecting me to do, which is also kind of like a fun game, because there are people that enjoy, you know, the spectrum of things that I create, and there are people that are only following me. I'm sure there's a large percentage of people that only follow me because they think that I'm a certain kind of creator. And so it's fun to kind of play with that dynamic. And, you know, sometimes I do dumb stuff that would be like very confusing to someone that thinks I'm about, like, you know, self-care. And, you know, it's like, what's this weird, you know, drawing of a weird face on a watermelon, or, you know, whatever I do. And that's kind of, you know, that's one of the ways I have fun with social media, is kind of mixing up that expectation versus like what I do and share.
Yeah, I'm kind of realizing maybe slowness is part of dumb stuff, or it can be, which is, I think, the opposite. It can be easier to understand dumb stuff as like, this is what it's not, because it's kind of like a weird nebulous thing. But I think social media is, like, not slow. And I think, like, a lot of dumb stuff is slow. Just if you have any thoughts about, like, maybe the general idea of, like, how everything has to be fast-paced and slowness is antithetical to success.
Yeah, I mean, I'm, like, generally a slow, like, I'm a slow, quiet person, like, in most respects. And so, like, I try to, like, manage my like web presence with just like, I don't try to be like super efficient at like things I make and share, and like I don't have like a posting schedule, and I don't have anything, like I don't really organize at all. And sometimes I won't post for, you know, a week or two, and sometimes I'll have an idea and I'll post like a couple things in one night. But I think that kind of taking a step back, and you know, it maybe mirrors like how I generally am in real life, where I just kind of, the things I share, you know, sometimes, you know, there's a lag between things, and there's, you know, I will promote a book or, you know, something that I've made recently, but I do try to keep like the social media feed, especially Instagram, kind of more loose and just not, I don't know, like I think that some people, there's just so much, like so much content and so much, like there's this like frenzy and this obsession with like interaction and the times you post and the days you post and like the frequency. And if you don't share a video because there's reels and like, you know, they're going to take away your views and the algorithms. And there is a time and a place to worry about that. And I do think about that. You know, sometimes I get low interaction and I'm like fuming, and not fuming, but I'm, you know, like, why did no one like that? Like I really like that. But I think that if you take a few steps back and you kind of let it go, like it's already a thing in motion, and that, like, you know, if you're like, if you just like spin the ball every now and then, it'll just keep going. And that maybe it's not like super important or necessary to like continually be like invested in like, you know, making this thing happen at full force. Which also kind of, you know, it's not fun. Like there have been like times where I've been really obsessed with, you know, things like that. And it's just, it hasn't been, you know, enjoyable. So at this point, I just kind of, you know, I post things when I do, but I also am not like, I don't drive myself crazy about, you know, the details. And I don't check numbers all the time. And like sometimes I just don't even read comments like at all, because, you know, it's like that's a whole like thing too. So it's, I don't know, there's a lot of anxiety involved in that, and like in managing social media. But I think that I'm mostly like hands off, and I kind of, you know, deal with it. But also like I answer messages. I'm pretty routine on a lot of stuff like that. But for the posting of the content, maybe not as, you know, serious as I could be.
Describe your work-life balance in 5 words or less.
Oh, that's tough. Like, this is the kind of thing that I will think about like for a long time before answering, if it was like an email interview.
Oh, wow. We could also you could think about it. We could break and come back if you want time.
No, it's probably best if I don't think about it, because once I think about it, it turns into another thing. Work-life balance, I would say patience. I'm pretty patient with like ideas. Should it be a phrase or should it just be like five like words? Maybe
either, I think.
Maybe do what you enjoy doing. Is that good? I mean, like,
yeah, I think it's really good.
Perfect.
There are times, I mean, there are times, like I said, where I don't really work on stuff, but I might not draw anything for a week or two. And sometimes I stay up all night and I just draw stuff. But, you know, you just kind of, you do work when you want to do work. And like, you just, you have fun when you want to have fun, and just kind of maintaining that balance and not being too like controlling about it.
Perfect. Yeah, well, let's have some fun.
What do you like to do for fun?
What do I like to do for fun? I like to spend time outside of the house. I like to, like, especially lately, I've been going on a lot of bike rides. I like going down alleys and, like, taking my bike to, like, corners of the city that I am unfamiliar with and, you know, taking pictures of stuff. Like, I am a big collector, and so sometimes I just want to collect images of, you know, things that I see in alleys, like old garages and stuff like that. Like picking blackberries is also kind of tied in there. So I enjoy, you know, moving around the city. I do spend a fair amount of time at home, and I do kind of have like my like setup here. So I have all my stuff and I'm always like tinkering with things. I like creating stuff, and oftentimes drawing is like the quickest way to create something. And so I do draw mostly, but I also just love like doing things that maybe, you know, are like creating physical stuff and doing other kinds of activities that aren't drawing, but are still like, you know, acts of creation. So I enjoy doing that kind of stuff. I have a large like record collection. Like, I like listening to music. Like, music has always been pretty important to me. Like, even like in middle school, it took a long time to figure out what I liked, but I've always listened to a lot of music, and you know, so I do spend a lot of time, you know, with my headphones on listening to stuff. I don't know, I enjoy hanging out with friends and, you know, doing all the like typical stuff. I don't know. I enjoy tweeting. I enjoy thinking of like dumb tweets. Like, so Twitter, like my Twitter is basically a collection of just like thoughts that I've had that maybe aren't drawings, but they are something that are, you know, it's kind of similar to drawings and that they're just like kind of fun, weird ideas. So I spend a lot of time just thinking about stuff like that. Like, I might have an idea for a tweet, but think about it for a long time before I'm able to like come up with a way to say it in a way that I think is, you know, fun to read. So I do enjoy those kind of activities as well.
I just want to say I'm definitely one for tweet drafts and revisions. And also I keep like a very long document that every year I have a document called Some Thoughts, like 2021. And it's just like the things I didn't want to like post for whatever reason, but they're similarly like weird glimpses or like different wordings of things. So I feel that.
Yeah, I can say that I used to have a Gmail draft that was like infinitely long, that had like ideas for everything and like thoughts, and like I would write stuff, and I lost it at a certain point. And like, I, you know how sometimes you like accidentally delete a draft and you like check your trash, and it's like sometimes it saves drafts, sometimes it doesn't. And I think I lost it, and then I tried to structure my thoughts and like Google Docs and like try to create like a way that, you know, they would be safe, but I still I've like gone back to Gmail drafts. I have like 25 like Gmail drafts where I just, everyone is like a different idea or a list of movies I want to watch, or like a list of, you know, tweets or just even half thoughts or, you know, thoughts for drawings. And I kind of, it's like a, it's a mess, but I kind of, you know, keep all my thoughts, you know, contained on the, in the Gmail drafts. So I also love, you know, workshopping tweets for like very long periods. And then like, you know, it's kind of, it's like a fine science, especially when the character count was 140, like trying to distill ideas to like their simplest forms. You know, it's, I don't know, it's kind of, it's like a fun mind game. Like, I'm not really one for like Mensa puzzles or crosswords, but I do enjoy, you know, thinking of a good tweet.
Yeah, I feel like using Gmail drafts to write notes is like how it's easier to draw on like bad paper, you know? Like, because when you get to the nice paper, you like freak out and get nervous, or at least I do. But like now I've kind of started making sketchbooks out of like weird scraps. It's much easier to get an idea out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. When you're not like, you know, it's like, I went to Michael's and I spent $17 on the Strathmore stock and like, I can't just like waste it. Like when you're just like drawing on paper you got from the recycling bin, like I, like working in an archive, there's all kinds of stuff discarded and like old paper and stuff like that. So I often will like pick up scraps and like take it to the paper cutter and like cut little, you know, slivers of paper and just draw all kinds of stuff that sometimes I save and sometimes I lose, but sometimes they turn into ideas for stuff.
I think jumping off of that, is being a librarian fun?
Yes. So I mean, when you go to library school, like saying you love books is like, no one wants you to say that, because it's just everyone, you know, it's like, of course we all love books. But yeah, I really enjoy it. And I'm kind of a quiet, you know, person, like I said. And, you know, I work at UBC, which is a university. So I work in the special collections there. And so we have a lot of archives and a lot of really cool old books. And so we have a lot of interesting like patrons that come in, and I'm working at the front desk. I'm a librarian assistant at UBC. And it's just fun talking with people and, you know, helping them find archival materials and maps and photographs. And it's kind of low key. Like when I first graduated, I graduated from a small college in Florida. And I tried to do, I did graphic design for a couple years, and it was like, it was really tough for me because I just wanted to do like my own stuff. And so like, I didn't want to like design like a basketball court for the Orlando Magic. I wanted to just like draw like fun, like gig posters and stuff. And so that didn't really work out. And I lived in Portland for a few years. And then I moved to Canada to get a library degree. And that kind of, you know, I thought about it a lot, and like, you know, working in libraries, I'm sure that a lot of people that work in libraries have the same idea where it's like, you know, it's kind of, it's a nice place to work. And depending on the type of library, it could be enjoyable. It could be stressful. It could be a busy, you know, downtown central public library. But yeah, the archive at UBC is pretty quiet. And so I get to spend a lot of time just, you know, with the materials, and it's very calming, and I get a lot of ideas from like old stuff. Like I'm always like searching collections, and we get donations of books. And so I'm, you know, looking through, you know, 500 books to see if we have those books in our collection already. And like oftentimes I, you know, I'm exposed to either old illustrations or just like kind of cool ideas or book covers and, you know, cool graphics. And so that kind of, it kind of helps me, you know, think of ideas, but also just to like kind of, you know, not really think about it too much and just see what I stumble upon and see how that like affects what I'm doing. And I love collecting like ephemera and stuff like that. Like I have like a huge collection of, I mean, I try to give away as much as I can, but I'm always collecting. Like I love antique malls, like probably my favorite like my favorite retail experience is like looking around in a, you know, antique mall for 3 hours, because I love digging around in like attics, and I don't know, I used to look through people's trash as a kid. Like, I just kind of like rummaging. And so I like collecting, you know, things, old things that I find. And working at a library kind of relates to that. Like I said, I go through the recycling bin and I pull out stuff still. So I kind of, it does, there's a transition there from like my interests and like what I enjoy, you know, working with and thinking about, and like my art and like what I draw. And like some, I guess sometimes, you know, my art can, I don't know, features, you know, something weird or old, or I know that sometimes I tweet about old books. But yeah, it's kind of a, there's a spectrum there, and like my art and my work kind of both interact, you know, in the middle of that.
Absolutely. I'm a big street gift fan. Like, just a couple months ago, I found like two playing cards or dice sometimes, or, you know, just like little ephemera. Mm-hmm. That's like street ephemera. So I'm with you.
Yeah. My partner Erin, like, gets upset with me because I'm always picking stuff off the ground. Like, I have, let's see, I can show you 1 second. This is my collection of grocery lists. And so I won't dump them out, but I have like, I'm always in the grocery store, like looking in the corners, in the dusty corners, like trying to find scraps of paper. And like, so I collect those things. And I made a little zine with the grocery lists, but I kind of have these weird obsessions that, you know, like I'm always picking stuff up off the ground because I just want to see, you know, what it is. Maybe it's like a phone number. Maybe it's like an appointment, or maybe it's a list of something cool. Like, I'm just curious in that regard. And so I'm always kind of not hoarding stuff, but just collecting things and putting it in my pocket.
I'm with you. But it's a lot of your stuff seems to be like smaller scale, a lot of your collecting stuff. I guess that makes it easier also. Mm-hmm. Space wise.
That stuff. Collecting paper scraps, and I have like two boxes of like trinkets and tchotchkes that can't fit in my current apartment space right now. Oh, I love tiny things.
Yeah, I have way back a few years ago, I have this bubble machine at Lucky's, and I sell little like capsules with like usually small books. But I had the idea to have a like a mini yard sale a few years back. There's a post about it. But I collect tchotchkes, and they pile up. Like, I wish you could see like my like desk here, because there's just overflowing with small weird stuff. And I collected all these things that I had like moved from apartment to apartment for like a decade, and I'm like, this is cool stuff, but I'm also kind of like, I want some like new stuff. So I put them all in capsules and sold them all for 50 cents, and you could go buy a piece of, you know, I called it the yard sale, but it was just kind of, you know, weird small things that could fit in a 2-inch, you know, sphere. But I'm trying to like learn how to recycle things and like renew my collection, because I'll never stop collecting things, so I have to eventually make space for the new stuff that is going to be added to it.
I'm trying to figure that out. It's so hard for me to let go of my little things. I've been when I have like little tchotchkes that I don't have room for anymore, I've been going to my roommate and I'm like, do you want this? Because I can't bear to part with it, but I know you might have a little extra room, and that means I don't have to like, you know, send it away or something.
Yeah, it's still in the same apartment. That's funny. So it's near.
Yeah, it makes me feel, I'm like, okay, it's near and it's with somebody I trust.
Yeah. So you mentioned you tried to be a graphic designer for a little. Did you go to school for graphic design when you were in Florida?
Yes. So in 2006, I attended Flagler College, which is smaller than my high school. So it's in St. Augustine, Florida, which is a small town south of Jacksonville by about an hour on the coast. So I went there to do graphic design, because when I was, you know, in high school and before that, I loved to create stuff still. I like to draw. And I became obsessed with this one design firm in Orlando called Lure Design, like a fishing lure. and they made like gig posters for like all kinds of events like in town, and I had like a huge collection of gig posters, and like I don't know, like my original like draw to like design was like making, like a lot of people, they're like, I want to make t-shirts or like bands, like I want to make an album cover, I want to do like, you know, a gig poster for, you know, a cool band. And so I kind of, you know, at 18 was like, I think that graphic design is a practical, you know, path, because I can do fun stuff, but I can also do serious stuff. And like, that's what I should do for a living. And so, yeah, from 2006 to 2010, I attended Flagler for graphic design. And I thought I was like a pretty cool designer for a while. And I still have a lot of like, you know, I learned a lot of things when I went to school, and I still like apply those things to, you know, that I work on. I made like an invoice document in like 2008 that I still use like to this day to like when I invoice clients. I don't know. It was valuable to learn, you know, just how things work and how things are put together, and like, you know, learning basic programs and like kind of figuring out like InDesign. I never got into like Flash and like web stuff. Like that was always like over my head. But you know, introduced to like Illustrator and Photoshop, and I kind of had used all of those like programs and all the things that I learned, you know, just in creating stuff in general. So it was you know, a good time. And like maybe I didn't want to actually be a designer, but I just wanted to create stuff, and I thought that was going to be a way to do that. But at the end of the day, it's like I'm creating like, you know, laptop cases for Dell, and it's like that's kind of like, you know, doing like production work and like not exactly like creative work, but I'm just like arranging like NBA logos on this like hard case that like is going to house a computer that like I could care less about. So I kind of, you know, after I moved to Portland, decided that maybe I should not try to work at a design, you know, agency anymore, but do something else.
For sure. I think I'm like in the middle of that right now. We both graduated in 2019, and all of those with an illustration degree, and me with a graphic design degree. It's very sensible. But yeah, I felt always like a little like I would make stuff with my hands, and it was like different, and people were like, why? Like, why are you doing that? Like, why would you do that? So yeah, I don't know. Recently I bought a big chain stitch machine, which feels very different. And I'm just, yeah, I think right now I'm just having a good time. And I guess when I stop having a good time, I'll be done. But I don't know. I'm going to keep going until I'm going to ride the wave.
Yeah, that's cool. I want to hear about the dumb stuff that you guys are doing.
Oh,
I don't know. I feel like we all are doing dumb stuff, and it seems like you both understand like the value of doing that kind of work.
Sure. My like daily dumb stuff is usually like hand feeding my parents' dog, cut up food, like in a really gross way. That's like my number one like constant. Let's see. My room. I've moved home. My room is crazy colors. Chain stitch. That's like kind of dumb stuff. I don't know. I was like on the design track, and I was at like a kind of, I had an internship at like a prestigious like food restaurant group, and then I dropped out and became a sign painter in like a really crazy and dramatic thing. And then when that, yeah, I don't know. I feel like all I do is dumb stuff.
That's great, though. I think that dumb stuff is like is so important, and like it should be guiding the way in some respect. Like, I don't know. You can't be too serious. Like, you gotta do some fun stuff.
Absolutely. You want to go, Olive? Sorry.
Yeah. No, I want to take stuff. Well, I mean, the other day I took this $15 Target lamp and I covered it in felt, and now it's a flower thing. I think
I like just did that this weekend, and I think it's the beginning of like a new like realm of dumb stuff for me, where I like cover furniture or like small, like I think I'm going to do this shelf next, and I have a lamp in the living room that's in progress. So I think making my home furnishings look like they're from like Webkinz or something is my next realm of dumb stuff. But I've been making tiny little like needle felted like fairies and horses and things for a while. You know, and you know, I said like sell them on Etsy, but I'm like, eh, like I put them up, people buy them, they buy them, but I'm just like, if they don't buy them, I'm going to put them everywhere. And that's been my dumb stuff as of late.
That's really cool. I like the lamp. It looks like something out of like Moomin Valley or something.
Yeah, I was like, it was just like a cheap like gray lamp, and we had like the hurricane going through New England like on Saturday, and so I was like not leaving the house, and I was just like, I think that's what I need to do. I need to make this lamp into a little flower.
And I like your room too. I feel like I feel like spaces like are really important, and like how like I actually have a video on YouTube about me just like walking around my space with the camera, but I feel like your space is always kind of like an evolving like thing. Like it's not like even my bedroom as a kid, I would like rearrange the furniture like every like few months just to like create like a different feeling. And I feel like rooms can definitely be like, rooms and furnishings can be like a thing that you're always working on, and it's like never, it's like kind of like a living thing that, you know, you don't always document, but you can invest a lot of time and energy into like creating different feelings and different, like, you know, I don't know, it's a powerful thing, like, you know, how you decorate your interior spaces.
Absolutely. I'm going to complicate things a little. Olive's actually in my old room.
Yeah.
That's now the studio.
Yeah.
Reveal.
So, the space has changed a lot in the past year.
Are you both in Brooklyn?
I'm in Ridgewood in Queens.
I was in Ridgewood in Queens. I was like, we should move to Ridgewood, Queens. And then I quickly after, I was like, I think I'm going to go home. I think that was also probably dumb stuff, though, because I was like, you know, I'm kind of like burning through a lot of money here. And I conveniently went full-time freelance in February of 2020. Dumb stuff. And it's been like great in some ways, but like the stress of making ends meet as that being my primary thing, like primary way of making money in the global pandemic, was just like kind of paralyzing. And it's still like a little, I still feel a lot of anxiety about it, but much less. But yeah, just in terms of spaces for me, I feel like I'm in a weird like time capsule here. Like, this isn't my childhood home or anything. Like, my parents, we moved around so much when I was a kid, like 8 or 10 times, all in New York, all around Queens, Brooklyn, and Long Island. But like, now I'm like, I don't really want to, like, I don't have the energy to change this. It's kind of comforting that it's how it is. But yeah, that to complicate everything, there's a couple things. Anyways, spaces. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Speaking of like former lives and being in your childhood home or whatever, I'm gonna go back to Florida for a second.
Let's go.
Yeah. Broadly, how do you feel? You know, the Florida man stereotype, like, yeah, like Florida man is wearing like a tank top and punches an alligator, whatever. How do you feel about that stereotype? And do you ever feel like a Florida man yourself?
I think it's a funny stereotype. And I mean, one of my friends was once a Florida man in high school. He like caught a squirrel. Like, I forgot what the story was, but there was like a squirrel in like Winter Park, Florida. And it was like going crazy. And like, he like somehow managed to like capture it under something. And like, it was a long time ago and I haven't thought about that story. But, I don't know. I feel like it's mostly harmless. I mean, like, sometimes the stories are not great, or, you know, the things that have happened are like terrifying, actually. But Yeah, I don't know. I feel like every state kind of has its things, and it's like people that are known for like doing crazy stuff. I was never really a Florida man myself. I mean, there were some times where I got pretty weird, but I don't think I ever did anything that was worthy of like a headline. Like, I don't know, like once a random story on, you know, 2000, like New Year of 2000, it was like midnight and I was like 14 and I went swimming in a lake at like midnight because I thought it was like a, you know, fun thing to do. Like, I don't know, I was like, it's the new year, it's 2000, I gotta like, so I just got into the lake. Like, it wasn't a lake you would swim in either, it was just like a big lake, and I was just kind of a weird kid, and so I would do weird shit like that all the time, but generally pretty harmless, and like, you know, I never went on like a rampage of any sort. Once I rode my bike through a shopping mall, that was in Florida. So I did that once. I just put a camera on my bike and I just rode my bike through the shopping mall. And then I met my friends outside afterwards, and like mall security came and was like, you can't do that again, or we're going to ban you from the, you know, Fashion Square Mall. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm only going to do it once. So maybe if the, like, you know, authorities had caught wind of that story, maybe there would have been something, but I'm sure like teens do stuff like that all the time. So, but yeah, it was mostly just, you know, pretty tempered. So I wasn't ever doing anything too crazy.
For sure. We were laughing hard. I was laughing hard. I don't know if you can see it.
I've always liked doing weird stuff, and like sometimes that means like riding a bike through the mall. It's like, that's, I would approach that with the same like enthusiasm as like working on a, you know, drawing. So I, you know, always have felt impulses to do stuff, like
dumb stuff,
whether it be an activity or something that you could call art, or just like something you could like eat. I don't know.
Yeah, it's all dumb stuff, all the good stuff at least. Oh, something I just thought of really fast before the final question. This podcast is totally dumb stuff. We like sometimes get $5 sponsorships per episode, so we pay each other $2.50 to do this like many hours of like stuff that we just give up. We're like, this is free. Like, we want you to have free information because you might not have had access to it or whatever. Like, everyone should know this, and I think people would be like, you have to monetize this, make a Patreon, whatever. But
yeah. My mom's always like, are you making money off of that? I'm like, nope.
Yeah, you are. $2.50.
$2.50. I feel like telling her $2.50 would make her more worse. Obsessed than saying no. But that's not the point. We do it because it's fun.
Dumb stuff. Okay. So the final question, tell us about something fun that you found recently that you love.
Let's see. Something like a noun, you would think, or like a activity, or could it just be anything?
Anything.
Let's see. I mentioned this earlier, but I think that, you know, I used to ride my bike all the time in Florida, because it was super flat, and I would just like ride my bike for like hours, and I would like come home at like 3 a.m. and just, I would just ride around. And I moved to Portland and I got a new bike. And then like, it was kind of hilly there, and so I didn't really ride as much. And then I moved to Vancouver in 2013. And like, I thought it was too hilly here to ride a bike. I didn't really know, like, I didn't really use bike streets. So I didn't really like learn how to like bike around the city, but I just told myself it was too mountainous to bike, so I kind of didn't for a long time. And since the pandemic began, I started riding around, and that really has I've always loved riding bikes, and doing that, like I ride it as often as I can, like it's really has changed like my perspective and how I think about a lot of things. And like I said, I like going down alleys and just going to parts of town that I have never been to before, but I don't know, doing that has been a great source of fun. And inspiration, I feel like when people ask you like what inspiration is to you, it's always kind of like a hard question to answer. But I don't know, I feel like riding around and just observing like people like living in the city has been like a great source of inspiration to me. And that's probably been the most fun thing I've been doing lately. I mean, I find all kinds of things fun, but I don't know. I feel like bike rides are like as a whole, like probably the biggest source of fun in my life at the moment. At least, you know, like we haven't really returned to like a social like scene yet. So like there's not like, I haven't spent a lot of time with like friends and, you know, doing stuff like that. We're kind of like getting back into it, but so there's been a lot of like solitary moments in the last, you know, year and a half. And so, you know, bike rides are just a way to get out and do something, you know, by yourself, like generally.
That's really nice. I mean, we're good. Unless you have any parting words, we can.
Yeah. I mean, this is really great. It's really cool that you both have a podcast. Like, I feel like I have played with the idea of having a podcast, but, or like doing anything that takes like, you know, perseverance, like you have, like having a newsletter, it's like people always do like, you know, three issues and then they're like, is this like so hard?
Yeah.
Or like you do a podcast and you have like, you know, you do four or five and it's like fun, but then you're like, I always kind of burn out on that kind of thing. And, but I have friends that have been doing podcasts for a long time and they have hundreds of episodes and it's like insane to me, but it's so cool that, you know, people are able to like keep up like the energy and the time required to like, you know, do that. But I think it's cool that you, that a cold email exists. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah, and in saying that it's good that this exists. That was cool. You can find Hiller's work at hillergoodspeed.ca. That's HillerGoodspeed.ca. On Instagram at hillergoodspeed and on Twitter at hillergoodspeed. Thanks for listening to The Case for Doing Dumb Stuff. I'm Basha.
And I'm Olive.
And we'll see you next time.
Cold Email is a very professional podcast about being early career creatives and all the trials, tribulations, and good times that come with it. Recorded, written, and performed by Basha Kurlander and Olive Lagaze. Edited by Basha Kurlander. Follow us on Instagram at cold.email and check out our website, cold-email.tumblr.com. Email us at coldemail1000@gmail.com with any questions you want us to answer on the show, suggestions for future themes, or to inquire about guests starring in an episode. Music by Basha Kurlander aka Marbly. As always, thanks for listening.
Oh, my number one hobby.
Ads, listen to the ads. And or like,
can I read you how many likes they have on Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna read it as numbers because I have a hard time changing it into words. Okay, 144,495. You know what I'm talking about.
Wow, yeah.
Like 100,000. The frauding, yes. Venmo. When I hear like a random noise and we're recording, it mm-hmm. just throws me. I'm like so precariously perched. Like on a ledge, I'm about to lose a thought. And then it's just like, boom, I hear a door. And I'm like, I was going to say, oh, here we go.
Where you were like, oh, like the backpacks, like the stuff that was in people's backpacks.
Wow, that's so annoying that I did this.
I was like, why was this like so ready? Cool. I'm so lame. I don't know how to use a fucking camera. Wow.
I hope I wasn't bragging.
Oh, no. I was just like, oh, my God, I'm in art school, and I have a tiny, shitty high school art program, and oh, my God, I don't know how to do anything.
I didn't even take...
like, you're so cool. Oh, I'm my not... God.
I was like, I do love when people from Pratt post, like, it's been 6 years in New York. That's crazy. I'm like,
oh my God.
Damn, it's been 24 years in New York and shit just keeps getting weirder and weirder. So just you wait.
Yes. Yeah. Do you want me to say anything about Pond Life before that? Published by Pond Life in May of 2021. Oh, wait, no. Yeah, Pond Life is the title. Oh, my God. That's just me looking at all these... no, it's my bad.